What is up, everyone? Before we get into this episode, I just want to thank our sponsors, the African Students Association from the University of Notre Dame, for sponsoring us. And let's hear a bit more about what they have to say about their Pan-African Youth Conference, which will be happening in March.
Kwame Nkrumah, Julius Nyerere, Nelson Mandela, Patrice Lumumba. The historic mission of that first generation of African leaders was to liberate Africa from the throes of colonialism and imperial domination. Thomas Sankara, Yoweri Museveni, Jerry Rawlings. The historic mission of the second generation of African leaders was to consolidate the gains from independence and to set Africa on the path to socio-economic transformation. As the current generation of young Africans, we too are faced with an important task of first, discovering what our historic mission is as a generation, and secondly, deciding whether to fulfill or betray that mission. Thus, the African Students Association of the University of Notre Dame will host a virtual edition of the Pan-African Youth Conference, which will bring together a Pan-African network of university students from Africa and across the world. Participants at the conference will grapple with four critical questions that are pertinent to our understanding of our historic mission as a generation. 1. Who are we as Africans? Where are we as a continent? How did we get here? And most importantly, where and how do we go from here? The conference will feature a keynote address from one of contemporary Africa's foremost thought leaders, Professor Achille Mbembe from the University of Cape Town. We invite you to be part of a Pan-African network of young Africans seeking to discover the historic mission of our generation and to fulfill it. Africa needs you. Will you answer the call?
To register for this event, follow the link in my bio, on my Instagram, or my TikTok. Let's get right into the episode. Welcome, guys. Just before we get into the episode, once again, when I mention that people don't deserve statues regardless of what they've done, I am not referring to religious figures, anything like that, because that's obviously, it's really up to religion and what it says, etc. If you do follow religion, obviously, I'm just speaking from my perspective in a secular sort of area. But from my religious perspective, there's no such thing as statues, or they're just totally impermissible. So that's just a bit of context before you get into the episode. What is up, everyone? My name is Adnan Shafi, and welcome once again to Timbuk Tuesday, where I let you guys know about African history, or we discuss certain topics that are related to the African continent that mean a lot to me. So in this solo podcast today, we're going to be outlining the case about taking down statues that are there venerating people who actively participated in, promoted, and condoned acts such as slavery and colonialism. By slavery, we mean transatlantic slavery and also European imperialism mainly. This is what we're talking about, because I feel like there's a lot of statues that have been erected both in the United States and in the UK venerating these people, and the same thing for Europe. So we're going to unpack what this truly means for our society and why they should come down. So before we even get into the nitty-gritties, let's just look at the purpose of statues. So get comfortable, guys. We're going to be having a very deep discussion, and I'm just going to have it as if it's a fireside chat. So I'm just going to turn on the fire now, and we're just going to have some crickets in the background as well, so we can have that campfire sort of aesthetic. But let's head right into it. What is the purpose of a statue? And if you look into history, statues, or at least monuments, have been made as a tribute to certain people who have either contributed a lot to society, or even for some mythical figures that have been venerated. So what we see, especially in the last maybe 3,000 years or so, in a lot of communities all around the world, statues have been there so as to venerate people. That's basically the main essence of statues. We don't want this person to be forgotten, and it's some aspect of someone's legacy if you're building a monument in their name. So when you look at people and they're being venerated, you often assume, or sometimes people jump to the conclusion, right? Because this is the imagery that a statue gives. You see that it's been sculpted and it's shining. I mean, what does that say about a person's demeanor? What does it say about the behavior. Some people think that it's as literally as the statue is communicating, a model for society, something to be immortalized over time, or something that everyone in society should look up to. So that's one key thing that we should remember. And in my opinion, I think that no one should have statues at all. And yes, even I really don't really care about what they did, etc. The reason why I think statues are actually something that are harmful to society is that, yes, you can definitely venerate someone. Someone's done good things. But in some ways, immortalize that, right? Unless they have some sort of, you know, extraordinary origin or nature of their character, I don't think that they should have a statue, right? And this also roots heavily from my religious beliefs, where we're not even allowed to draw animated beings or, you know, have portraits put up of someone in a certain room or even just in certain buildings at all. So I think that the idea of statues, in my opinion, it's a form of societal worship, right? You are pushed, this image of someone else is pushed forward, that they are almost a perfect person, and there's not much room in the subconscious, like, you know, analysis of a statue to suggest that someone is not a perfect individual. And a lot of people have to look behind that statue to be able to determine the nature or the character of this person. Which brings me to my next point. I think it's important, obviously, although I've already said that I don't think that anyone deserves a statue, let alone even portraits to be put up somewhere or to have their head on a coin. That's my opinion, right? And it's not really the subject of this podcast. You can DM me if you want to get to know my deeper thoughts later. But if I was to choose, and I was at a point where I actually had to choose, or something bad was going to happen to me, like, I don't know, whatever, right? If I had to absolutely choose, I would say that at least this person should have some base level merit to their claim of being venerated so much in society. Like, why are you being venerated so much? You must be an exemplary person. So now we have to really look at the slave owners that have been honored. We also have to look at the colonizers that have been honored, and we have to assess their moral stature. Is it something that is deserving in some way, shape, or form of veneration? That's the first question to sort of ask. And I might as well rebut another point that some people talk about. They talk about how, you know, if you decide to take down these statues, you're taking down history. We've already said that the purpose of a statue is to venerate people. Yes, in many ways, it's an interesting way of showing a historical opinion on what someone was or what someone looked like, or, you know, at the very least, what people thought about them. If you're getting a statue, then people obviously thought of you very highly. But it doesn't necessitate the idea that, oh, if there's no statues, then there's no history. Then in that case, the subject of history would revolve solely around statues and not around oral accounts, not around written accounts. And therefore, this argument just fails the test of logic, in my opinion. It's like, it's a non sequitur. It simply just does not follow that if there's no statues of someone, that the history is going to somewhat disappear. It's for the purposes of veneration, so we have to assess that claim. To what extent can this person be venerated in society, and can that veneration be justified? So in my taxonomy of this concept of veneration, I fall back on this ideal of slave owners in this period essentially not being worth veneration, because the nature of slavery back then, with, you know, obviously mutilation, you have rape, you have people getting whipped, there's no way that anyone can come and argue to me that that person is worth veneration. It doesn't matter if they donated to charities. It doesn't matter if they discovered something. They fundamentally saw these people as non-human, and they also saw them as people that were deserving of, you know, punishment simply because they could not pick enough cotton or tobacco. And not just punishment, but harsh punishment, disproportionate and totally unjustified from the onset, because they've already been kidnapped from their lands, essentially. So I would say that why do we want to venerate such people? And I'd say that if you build a statue, you're just further perpetuating this idea that this person was so good that you can't even begin to challenge their moral stature. You cannot challenge that. And I personally think that's wrong. you don't allow people, or at least the kids that are growing up and seeing this statue, to holistically view this person's character. You are just pushing this idea down their throat that they are a perfect person without actually providing any claims through that statue. You're just simply making a statement. One argument that I hear in response to this is that it was a different time back then. And I am personally not convinced by this argument for many reasons that I will list now. First of all, we know that there are some certain intuitive things to human beings that we can all agree are wrong. And this is something that you can clearly see that stretches way beyond any society. And it's not just one place in Europe, it's everywhere. And this is something as basic as the rule of people being harmed for no reason. That is essentially morally wrong. And it's intuitive. We don't really have an explanation for it, right? And people have talked about this, obviously, like John Stuart Mill, the propensity for, obviously, people to favor pleasure over pain. This is something that is intuitive. It is normal for human beings to want to avoid pain in all circumstances, and it's something that is almost universal in terms of human beings. It's very rare for someone to want to actually seek pain if the end outcome was not going to be pleasure. That's something we can get into a bit later. But if we apply that in this frame of mind and assume that this is a value that has been able to exist for almost all time, we can agree that it is incredibly wrong, considering the situation of enslaved Africans, for someone to simply believe that it's okay to harm them, right? That is just, it does not make any sense, in my opinion. And if we were to place it against that rule, it definitely breaks that rule. And I would say that it's not something that deserves to be looked in even further. And the fact that people try to still go further and say, oh no, but you never know, maybe back then they didn't understand. So let's actually look at that claim and assess that claim together. First thing that we can use to shoot down this point is the actual fact that there are some intuitive truths that we come to, and we don't even need any external, you know, evidences to sort of prove that. And you can look into psychological studies and study intuitive thinking, and you'll see, for example, certain conclusions that we'll come to are simply deontological. They just feel right. They just feel correct. One of these things, for example, harming someone without a cause or a just cause is morally wrong. I know the idea of the word just, right? That is something that's political. You can obviously define it in different ways. And I totally understand that. But this concept as a whole, the idea that someone does not deserve to be harmed unless that is just, that is an intuitive thought that we come to, right? And even some of those things of, you know, what is just and what is not, there's certain things that are inherently repulsive to us. For example, even at the sight of dead flesh, we don't really like the sight of dead flesh, or generally most people would not like that. That is also why some people respond to traumatic situations with PTSD, etc. That's not something that we're really prepared for as human beings. So there's certain things that you don't need to really question about moral relativism over time, etc. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Now let's assess this according to slavery. You have people who have been essentially taken from their lands, right? And they've been sold into a system where if you don't work in a certain type of way, you actually have no rights, basically. And they can whip you, they can mutilate you, they can rape you. And in many times they can actually kill you, or they can amputate certain limbs, etc. Very, very brutal stuff. And just even at the sight of this, or at the thought of this, I'm sure most people would be somewhat disturbed. And if you aren't, then you are very much an outlier, and I would advise you to seek help. Because this is definitely something, it's a base ideology that most people embrace. We don't enjoy the concept or the idea of someone getting hurt unnecessarily. And we can talk about slavery, and we can definitely make those comparisons. So when we look at it from that perspective, we genuinely see that the concept of slavery does not hold up to this intuitive, deontological, moral conclusion that we have come to. And most people would actually just argue that it's just. It's like, when people hear the word slavery, it's already like, you know, that's something so morally repugnant that we shouldn't even be mentioning it. That's how some people actually see it. So why is it that we're ready to venerate some people when they actually have those ideas? It doesn't really make sense to me. When people would legitimize this, and then people will be like, oh yeah, but you know, racism was the culture of the day, you know, people really, really supported it. And then this is where we start falling into problems. If you can allow people to escape accountability because, and I quote, that was the culture of the day, then we might as well exonerate the Nazis for what they did to the Jews. And it sounds terrible, but this is the rabbit hole we're going down. Anti-Semitism was the culture of the day. You know, you can't blame the everyday German, you know, because they were taught in their schools that Jews were bad, you know? But any reasonable person would know and would be able to see through that. And essentially, despite the propaganda, despite all of that, would be able to see that Jews are also human beings. And this is exactly the thing that brings me to my next point. People argued that slaves were not human, and this was the main thing that actually justified slavery. And some people make it seem, and when they bring this argument forward, they make it seem as if this is something that scientists genuinely believed, and that allowed people to go into, you know, these essentially encampments in West Africa that they already had, and they would capture slaves. They would make it seem as if it was this societal blunder. You know, feel bad for them. It's unfortunate, you know, this was a product of our society. We feel so bad, you know, but they make it seem, I mean, you're essentially absolving these people of all forms of accountability by making it seem like it's some mistake. These people had culture. These people most definitely had families. They most definitely had language. They looked the same, save for skin color and a few differences in features. But this was the same thing with people from different sides of Europe, so it really shouldn't have been a big issue. And if you don't even need a degree, you don't need to be someone in academia to see that it is just conceptually difficult to argue that black people are not human, because the features are essentially the same, and they act the same way, have the same habits in terms of, like, you know, for example, eating food in the same way, etc. Like, you know, obviously there were cultural differences, but these were accounted for within the literature. But now when it came to black people, it's like, oh, they aren't, you know? But you realize that this idea or the concept of black people not being human, this is something that came top down, and it was there specifically made to make the idea of slavery and the oppression of black people more palatable to the masses. And this is exactly what happened. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they didn't want to feel bad for it, so they made up this lie to essentially demote black people essentially below the line of being human. And this is the main point that we're trying to make. We should not assume that these people made some form of mistake, or, oh, you know, it was our society, you know, that was the culture of the day. Then you might as well exonerate everyone who has done something bad just because it was, in quotes, the culture of the day, right? But we've already discussed that it's intuitively just something that we view as morally wrong to just randomly hurt people. That's exactly what happened. But essentially, this was used to essentially derive profit from black people that essentially became slaves. And this leads me to the final point. If a society makes a mistake, or not just a society, let's atomize this, go to the individual level. If you do something wrong to someone, the common thing that we see in all societies, and this is why I call it something that's intuitive and it's natural, is to essentially make right that thing which you did wrong. For some people, this is an apology, and at the very least, that is compensation. It's this idea of compensation. For some people, if you insult them, sorry acts as a form of compensation and as a way to make good with that person who you insulted, right? So that's the main thing that we can see. We can all agree that that's something intuitive. The idea of compensation as something that is able to make good what you had done wrong to someone. the concept of compensation is obviously different from society to society, but let's look at how this actually happened. If the society was truly this innocent society that made a mistake, you know, then why after slavery would they use the same exact basis for oppressing slaves to colonize essentially the entire world save for Europe? Why would that happen? Think about it. Why did they not compensate the slaves but compensate the slave owners? Do you see where this logic is coming from? It clearly showed that people were in it for the profit and not for the moral uprightness, not for moral uprightness, not necessarily for the good of society. They were in it for profit. That's the end of story. So you cannot absolve these people of any form of accountability. That is purely, I mean, for you to defend that, it's just, in my opinion, it's intellectually bankrupt. It truly is. Because you cannot argue that people were able to go against these intuitive things without some form of intellectual, doing mental gymnastics, essentially, yeah, intellectual gymnastics, and trying to just go against all forms of logic. I mean, you can definitely see that black people were human. So now let's look at a specific case, right? But before I get into that specific case, I also just want to make the final point that if this truly is the case, that society keeps changing, and maybe the values of our day today will not be accepted in the future, then it just proves the ultimate point. You can disagree with me on all points, but if you agree with me on this point, then you agree with me de facto that statues need to be taken down. Statues do not stand the test of time, and they keep forming divisions within society, and therefore there should be no statues in the first place. When you venerate people who, in one society's opinion, is worthy of veneration, but 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 70 years down the line, they disagree, then you're causing division within society. And therefore, I would argue, based on this idea of harm, that statues are doing society more harm than they are doing good. Additionally, I would just like to mention the point that a lot of people say get over slavery. They say get over colonization. But I, as a black person, when I walk through, for example, the streets of Cardiff, and when I go into, the capital, you know, the city center, I pass all these different places and I see certain statues, certain buildings. It is a psychological act of violence for me to see this society that claims to hold black people as equal to white people while contemporaneously venerating people who are simply going against those values. People who would have killed me or enslaved me by virtue of the color of my skin. So what is the society telling us as people of color? You know, oh, you're equal, but we're going to leave up these statues as a reminder that we oppressed you and your ancestors. As I said, the good will always outweigh the bad in this case. There's certain deal breakers for people, right? So this is definitely something that I would say that you need to really, really think about. You can't tell us to forget about slavery, then have statues that venerate the slave owners. It makes absolutely no sense to me. And now we're going to go into a very specific case in relation to Cardiff and why I think that the statue of Thomas Picton should be removed from the Capitol building. Actually, apologies, I just realized I didn't mean to say Capitol building. Honestly, just thinking about the Capitol in the US, but that's a story for another day. But I did mean City Hall in Cardiff, and definitely why this statue should be taken from there. Now, let's take you to Trinidad in the 1800s. Early 1800s, slavery is definitely still ongoing, and we have someone by the name of Thomas Picton, who's essentially one of the governors in Trinidad, and he is overseeing this place, essentially. And this is not the first time where he's had, you know, charges leveled against him. But in 1803, the Privy Council arrested him for charges that involved, and I quote, the unlawful death of slaves, free people of color, and even some of his own soldiers. In 1801 as well, he was put on trial for torturing Luisa Calderon, a 14-year-old girl of color who was accused, although there was no substantial proof of it, of being involved in a robbery. And I want, if you're really disturbed by the descriptions of torture, I mean, yeah, you can skip this part of the podcast, you know, get into my analysis a bit later, but this is something I feel like I need to state. Because this is the kind of person that people want to venerate. Let's go deep into what he actually did. And if you really want to venerate this man, you have to agree that this was morally upright to the point where it's justified to venerate him in any way, shape, or form. Even though, keep in mind, the people of his time, the British, didn't even do that, right? So essentially, she was put to be tortured by an act that's called picketing. So you have a rope that's tied around your hand to hold up your body weight, but obviously not fully. And you have to press down your foot onto a sharp stake. Sometimes it's metal, sometimes it's wood, to hold up your body weight. Otherwise, your hand would also get strained, and that would also be extremely painful. So you have essentially a choice between your hand getting strained and also your foot getting poked by this enormous stake. And as you can guess, this went to court, right? And after just a day of arguments and 5 minutes of jury deliberation, he was said to be guilty. But in 1808, and as you know, this is classic about the system in regarding the rights of people of color in general, they reversed that ruling that made him guilty and they exonerated him. So keep in mind, this man has been to essentially two sorts of hearings, you know, one with the Privy Council, one at another court in the UK. And people, he was generally someone who was seen in some societies to be, you know, as I said, morally bankrupt. They didn't like the idea that he had tortured someone who was just 14. And there's lots, you search this up. There's so many cartoons that are depicting this torture, and they've been spread around, you know, British society. And people genuinely, and many of them despise this man. But obviously, there were some people in the society who were definitely, you know, racist, and they thought that, okay, this was something that might have been justified. So this is the person that people want to venerate. So let's see why he's actually venerated. It said that he was one of the oldest people to die, one of the oldest ranking officers to die in the Battle of Waterloo. And because of his bravery, that's something that he was seen to be, that's something they're proud of, essentially, right? And hear me out. I mean, yes, it's definitely, it's something, obviously, depending on the conditions, right? It's definitely okay, like, for example, the way us as Africans, we venerate people who overthrew governments that were oppressive. We venerate people who fought in the Algerian War. We venerate people who took part in the Malagasy uprising. We venerate some people of the Mau Mau, etc. People who were involved in uprisings. This is understandable that in certain wars, people, you know, had this sort of bravery, etc. But then this is the question, right? Is a statue necessary to do that? No. Two, does a statue allow us to always, at all points, critically observe this person, or does it just make this claim that is basically unchallengeable because you have to demolish the statue in order to level the claim? So this essentially, the claim is that, oh, this person is should be venerated. It's like final. The finality of this stone object or bronze or gold, you know, being put somewhere where everyone can see, that is a statement of finality. You mean this. You want this person to be essentially immortalized by this statue. Right? Under those conditions, right? Can we truly say that this man, can we weigh, right? Yes, on one hand, he's a military hero, right? But even that's a topic for another day, or about just war, whether that was a just war, etc. You come to your own conclusions about that. Even if people want to recognize him for that good thing, I believe that you can do that without having a statue put up, essentially. And instead, what I would say in terms of the fairness and to allow people, the children of this generation, to grow up with an open mind, let the history books tell us who this man was holistically. Because what you're doing by putting up statues is you are venerating people and immortalizing them as if they will be good, they are good, and there's no argument about it. And this is why it's extremely offensive as a black person to even see that statue being put up there. Or even just being there in City Hall. Like, just the presence of that statue alone is something that irks me. And it's, as I said, a psychological act of violence that the state does upon every single person of color when they still have statues up like that. Because you are making an active statement that this person does not deserve to be challenged. They are morally upright and they represent the cultures of our day, and we are proud of them. So why don't you let the history books tell that story in a holistic way? Just like the same way Gandhi may have been argued to be someone that was good. Oh, look, he brought India together, etc. He brought people of different cultures together. He was someone that was an anti, you know, definitely anti-colonial in his thinking. But he was racist. He called for the apartheid in South Africa to continue and essentially continue to separate Indians or people who are essentially Asian from black people. And this is exactly what I'm saying. This is the problematic thing about venerating people. It doesn't matter who you are. You are not perfect enough so as to deserve this statue. You do not deserve to be venerated to that extent. No one does. That's my opinion. Right? And that's actually where I'm going to just basically close this off. Because when you look at Thomas Picton, you can clearly see that this man tortured a child. And he was also, you know, arrested by the Privy Council for three separate charges that had to do with violence towards, obviously, slaves, people of color, and even soldiers. So even outside of a race perspective, he was doing this to his own soldiers. It doesn't make too much sense to me why people still want to venerate him. And to the public that hears this and gets offended, my question is why? Like, why are you going to such lengths to defend someone who has perpetrated so much evil? We can both agree. If you're a military hero, you're a military hero. Some people may want to venerate you in some way, shape, or form. Right? And it's not like you can't be immortalized through books. But when a society comes together to erect a statue of someone, they are making an active statement that this is what this society stands for. And for me, to close off, it is completely unacceptable, knowing the nature of slavery, knowing the nature of this man, knowing who he was in his entirety, for him to even deserve the thought of a statue. And if you disagree, by all means disagree. But know exactly what you're justifying and know the rabbit hole that you're going down. And if you truly want society to move forward, as you so say, in every discussion where black people bring up slavery or black people bring up colonial oppression, if you really want to move on, do you want to leave these divisive relics standing? Is that truly what you want for society? Or is that simply you refusing to put away your pride? Because for you, as I said, you defending this person, and I would argue this, is you defending some element of white supremacy through your actions by allowing or wanting or even desiring that statue to still stand despite the evil that has been perpetrated by this person. That's where I'm going to close off if you're asking me the question. So do you think George Washington, do you think this person should not have a statue? As I said, no one deserves a statue. That's my opinion, right? If you want to venerate people, do it through the history books, right? In general, though. But if I was to choose, would I put these people and essentially have statues made of them? No. End of story. None of them are deserving of it at all, right? If I had to. That's where I'm going to end it, guys. Hope you enjoyed. Hope I was able to spark some questions. And definitely, this is an opinion I'm definitely not going to be retracting, because the concept of statues, especially when they're from oppressive people, right? Or they're modeling oppressive people, you really have to ask yourself as a statesperson, if these are the kinds of people that you want your children to look up to. Not just the good sides, but the bad sides as well. That's exactly what happens when you make someone a role model. Thank you very much, guys. This is the end. and I will see you in the next episode of Pariah Nation.